listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Here's your host, Dr. Mike Chubb.
Well, you might be asking yourself right now, hey, wait a minute, hasn't CMDA already released a podcast episode this week? Well, the answer to that question you just asked yourself is, well, yes, we have. This is a special edition of CMDA Matters, one that's related to an important announcement made on June 6th that you may or may not be aware of. The Doctors Protecting Children Declaration was made public at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. a little over a week ago. I wanted you, our listeners, to hear from two of the contributors to that new declaration that represents healthcare professionals. So keep on listening. I hope that you'll be challenged as well as encouraged that a handful of doctors and organizations have finally and formally challenged the prevailing zeitgeist of transgender activism within organized medicine in our country today. Well, we've got a very special program today on CMDA Matters, a couple of special guests, and we decided because of the urgent need to get out this information and put this on all of our listeners' radars, we decided to have a special program just this week. And today with me is Dr. Jeff Barrows, our Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy. Last week, Jeff, the world remembered D-Day, the invasion of Normandy, a beachhead 80 years ago by the Allies. Well, last Thursday, as the timing would have it, there was another, a brand new modern D-Day, not in Normandy, but in modernity. And it's a privilege to have the very first two speakers in a new declaration that was put out last Thursday in the National Press Club there in Washington, D.C., spearheaded by the American College of Pediatricians. So today we get to welcome the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Jill Simons is a board-certified pediatrician, did her training medical school at University of Wisconsin and her pediatric training also at Wisconsin, and then was in private practice in Minnesota until she became the executive director of the ACP or ACPEDS. Jill, how many years ago was that? Three, 4 years ago?
Yeah, just about 3 years ago. Thanks for having me.
Jill is a fellow of the American College of Pediatricians and the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is important for our discussion today, and in particular, a member of the section on developmental and behavioral pediatrics. Our other guest today is Dr. Andre Van Maal, this is at least his third appearance on CMDA Matters, talking about all things sexual orientation and gender identity. He's a board-certified family physician practicing in California, co-chairs our CMDA Sexual and Gender Identity Task Force, and is the transgenderism scholar for both CMDA and the American Academy of Medical Ethics. Also, another post I didn't know that you had, Andre, was that you've been working with Alliance Defending Freedom and a coalition of professionals advising on policy matters addressing sexual orientation and gender identity. So welcome to both of you today on CMDA Matters.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Dr. Simons, we sat together on an incredible day, March 26th, in the Supreme Court. We couldn't talk too much or else we would have been kicked out. But we did talk about a few things before the justices came in. One of those about how important ACPEDS is right now in this cultural moment to speak out about truth and about science on the issue of transgenderism. And at that time, I said, you go, ACPEDS, lead us forward. You'd already come up with your biological integrity website. And now leading a coalition of healthcare professionals forward to release Doctors Protecting Children. So was Doctors Protecting Children Declaration already being drafted? How long has that been going on? And tell us a little bit about the declaration and how it came about to be made public last Thursday.
Most certainly, it was in the works when I sat next to you in the Supreme Court. The American College of Pediatricians has been working on this issue for a long time, and we, along with many others in the coalition, have been speaking out about this and really not getting very far because we just kept getting dismissed as an extreme group. You know, it was easy to sort of isolate us and ignore us, but every person I would talk to when we would be talking about the issue of how children with gender dysphoria are treated would say, gosh, we just need to have a big voice, you know, come together We had been talking about this in our leadership meetings about what we were going to do. And, you know, one of the challenges in the U.S. is that there's no, you know, for good or for bad, no centralized governing healthcare organization, you know, not like in the UK or England where they can put a stop to it. So we really thought, you know, how are we going to get through? And to me, it was just, you know, this is, we're doctors talking to doctors. So we started putting this together for months. And then I started talking to you and others in leadership, and ACPs was willing to go it alone. And we knew that we had the support of others. But when I spoke to you over the course of those couple of days, and Donna Harrison and others, Mario Dickerson was there, just the support and the enthusiasm that you have just solidified in my mind that this is what we have to do. And having that support just really made a difference to getting this coalition together and having the courage. So thanks for supporting that more than you know.
Well, Dr. Van Maal, as Mike mentioned, our listeners have heard from you a couple of times before on this podcast, and typically dealing with the issue of transgender ideology and management of gender dysphoria. So my question to you is your thoughts on whether this declaration will provide any validation of the recent criticism of our approach here in the U.S. to gender dysphoria, specifically by Dr. Hilary Cass from England, who was the major author of the recently released Cass Review.
Yeah, so this Cass Review is a very big thing, you know, 4 years in the making. It has 8 systematic literature reviews that are also peer-reviewed publications published alongside it. So there's a great deal of data there. So this declaration is, you know, kind of a 1-2 punch along with that, making the information very difficult to ignore. So as the Cass Review is, you know, picking up steam, and again, the problemed North American medical organizations either try to dismiss it or ignore it, here comes this declaration just given last Thursday, and you know, some of the on X, but some of the tweets, we still call them, that show, you know, Jill giving the introductory remarks have been picked up by some big guns like Elon Musk, and as of this morning, we're up to 52 million views. My presentation apparently was picked up by Dr. Jordan Peterson and some others, and it's up to 750,000 as of this morning. So it becomes unignorable. So yeah, I think it's, well, I along with several others deem that we are now at the tipping point. The tide is turning. That does mean things get harder, not easier, but yeah, this is going to go a long ways. And, you know, keep in mind, just this year, not only do we have the CAST review, but another systematic literature review that came out of Germany to similar conclusions. And now just this weekend, a study released out of Baylor University by Dr. McDevitt in Acta Pediatrica. I just saw it this weekend that they were looking at the literature reviews, the comprehensive reviews of the subject of hormonal therapy and gender dysphoric youth. And the conclusion on this is stunning. And I quote, "This analysis suggests that contrary to assertions of some experts and North American professional medical organizations, the impact of hormonal intervention on depression and suicidality in this population is unknown." So they are directly striking at this repeated assertion by several North American medical organizations that, you know, gender-affirming healthcare drastically improves mental health, tremendously reduces suicidality, and none of it is true. So yeah, this is very much on fire right now.
So Jill and or Andre, you've kind of gone into the next question I wanted to ask in terms of what has, for our listeners' benefit, what has been happening in the last 6 months building up to this declaration last Thursday? What has been going on? And since you focused on international studies just now, Andre, I wonder, Jill, what have you seen coming out of any of our secular big associations, AAP, APA, and AMA and so forth? Has there like even been the smallest hint that there's any recognition that the science is not settled?
No, I mean, that's what's so mind-boggling to me, and I know so many others that are involved in this. I would have thought that with the release of the WPATH files, the leaked files, that that was a few months ago in March, I believe, that showed actual emails from these gender-affirming care, so-called gender-affirming care clinicians, you know, with their own doubts and some of these awful stories about what was happening. I would have thought with that, when that was released, Michael Schellenberger broke that story, that that would have, you know, raised the alert on some people. And then, as Andre mentioned, the CAST review final report came out. And I was waiting for then, you know, our colleagues in the U.S. to say, oh, we'll take a look at it. But they doubled down. I mean, the AAP came out and they're doing supposedly a review of their policy statements. But they have said so much as, you know, we hope it reinforces our current protocols. And the CAST review didn't add anything, you know, similar to the Endocrine Society. The American Psychological Association came out with similar statements. So they're not backing down.
Well, Jill or Andre, what are your highest hopes and the best case scenario for this declaration release?
There's two ways that this ends. One way is that physicians, smart physicians, realize what is happening and, like they've done throughout history, you know, changed how they practice medicine when they see the evidence and the research. So that's my, I'm optimistic that my fellow physicians will do that. The other way this ends is through legislation in the legal world, that this just can't continue. So I hope it's the first.
Andre?
I think this is not an either or. It will be both, because it is already both. I mean, you know, what we've seen this year is NHS Wales, NHS Scotland, NHS England have all done the 180. You know, courtesy of the CAST review, which, you know, they already were looking at because of the interim review that was released a little bit ago. But they've done the 180. Denmark in the past several months has done the 180. One by one, here the dominoes are falling. The situation in the United States, what one Irish activist on the subject has said, is this is for some, and I think the medical organizations in question here are among them, as well as some of the activists driving it, is this will be like some of those Japanese soldiers on those Philippine islands that refused to accept that the Japanese Empire had surrendered, and they just keep fighting. Some will turn around, you know, others won't. Again, the big names in this, and in terms of medical organizations and so forth, and let's be specific, I mean WPATH, I mean the American Academy of Pediatrics, I mean Endocrine Society, are being sued, and they're being called to defend themselves. You know, if there's so much science behind what you're saying, how about you say it under deposition? The state of Florida tried to do that. Two other states, I believe two other southern states, one of which was Alabama, tried to do that. But with this malpractice case involving patients and, you know, so-called experts in New England, now they're going to see themselves on the stand to answer the questions that, in fact, I and some of my other colleagues submitted some time ago to the law firms involved to make these groups answer. So it's going to be this multi-front thing, and that's okay. Some organizations are going to see the light of day and make their transition for, that's a bad choice of word, make their change. But with some of these guys that are in court already on this, one could see how they would think that doing anything but doubling and tripling down is to concede defeat, you know, on a judicial level. So it's a mess, but it's a mess they made.
You know, Jill, I was pleased to see today on your Biological Integrity website a map of the U.S. and to see that 25 states have actually passed bans against so-called gender-affirming therapy, and our AAME has been involved in a lot of those efforts as well with you. And what certainly what we've seen Andre experiencing as he's been providing testimony in many of those states is what I'm calling an oppressive silence. An oppressive silence from those who are local healthcare professionals in those states. And we have to drag Andre and other experts to give testimony because the local physicians won't speak up. So here's my question. I know that you've set it up in the declaration so that those who are still part of the silence are still able to submit their names. Tell our listeners how that works and how they can participate in this declaration, because after all, that's really what we want to have happen right now.
Right. And I certainly understand the fear and hesitation of a lot of the physicians out there. I mean, they're under real threat of losing their livelihood, their jobs, you know, their career in medicine or worse. So those of us who have signed publicly, I mean, we're in the public eye already. That comes along with the job, but we don't expect physicians to necessarily take that risk. I will say, though, we're hoping with us showing leadership and, you know, this coalition that is rapidly growing, that they feel safer to step out. Because I will say this, this is the majority of physicians that do not go along with these organizations like the AAP. They're just either afraid to say something or just not really involved in the discussion by choice. But like you said, it's getting harder to ignore, especially after this declaration. So for any physician or any person, really, this declaration is open to concerned citizens, parents, you know, anyone to sign it. There is an option to remain anonymous, but your name will be counted so that we can keep a tally of who's signing. We've also got a world map up there. There's signers from over 50 countries and growing. The list of organizations that have signed is also growing. That's important because these organizations represent, you know, hundreds, thousands of healthcare workers and leaders in the industry. So they can certainly go on. There's a button on the doctorsprotectingchildren.org site where you can sign the declaration, and it will walk you through how you want your name listed or anonymous.
Well, Jill, I'm curious. We've mentioned several of these still very pro-transgender affirmation groups like the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Endocrine Society and the AMA. But in the process of putting together this declaration, did you engage in any formal preliminary communication with any of these groups, or have you had any more communication since it was released?
Right. We did reach out. We made some personal calls and outreach to them, and we have been over the past years. I mean, we've had people, you know, past presidents of the AAP who are still very involved. People like myself, I'm still a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics, that are within the organization fighting to try to raise awareness and to have them even look into this. So we have reached out. We did right before the declaration, and we continue to do so even after this has been released. So we, you know, we're calling for, at the very least, open debate. You know, we'll show you the research we've seen. So we have. I'm hoping, like I said, that they still can reach out and change course, and we can clean our own house with this.
Jill, I just wanted to ask, I've read a number of articles over the last several years that have been kindly shared with me on this topic. And my understanding is so many of those top three or four societies that we're talking about that continue to promote this truly have at their top leadership levels folks from the LGBTQ community that continue to promote this ideology, and that it's highly unlikely that they're going to change. And with the CAS review and incredible, just more and more convincing science about the confusion and lack of data, they're still holding. So is there anything missing in the equation that you as a pediatrician within the AAP or Andre within the AAFP, AMA, all of these, is there anything missing other than more and more voices like yours within those societies to continue to try to push for open, honest, and level-headed debate on these issues?
Just that internal pressure from members, putting that kind of pressure on the leadership. There are a few leaders that we have been talking to. I think hopefully this gives them the courage to speak louder within those organizations. It also, you know, the pressure from parents, you know, when I... patients come in and their parents are asking questions and interviewing their pediatrician or their doctor. These are things that they're going to be looking for. So we've partnered a lot with parent groups. And then like Andre mentioned earlier, what's already happening, you know, on the legal front, the CFOs are getting involved saying, you know, this is becoming too much of a liability, and they're putting pressure that way. So there are several that are very entrenched in this, and I think they will, if you know, not able to change their viewpoint, even despite the overwhelming evidence and the pressure, that they will no longer be part of the organization, step aside. But I do think good, smart physicians will prevail.
Yeah, a few things come to mind. you know, the internal pressure that Jill was talking about is important. I've helped and am helping with at least one major organization, the AAFP, okay, the one I'm a part of, helping them with their, not the organization itself, but the groups within them that are trying to fight against this thing, you know, drafting proposals and stuff to be considered on the state and national levels. So the internal pressure, you know, has to be there for these organizations. But, you know, secondarily, what we're also seeing is some of these gender clinics are starting to close down now because their malpractice rates are getting too high. You know, insurance actuarials care nothing about ideology. They care about math and dollars. And the math and dollars is increasingly working against them. So, you know, again, this is a multifaceted, multi-front war, and there's certain practicalities that come into play such as that with this.
Well, as I was going to say, one of the results of this transgender tsunami has been the increasing number of people, as you both well know, who regret their decision to undergo what I call gender transition therapy, and then they decide to detransition back to identifying with their biological sex, and they are known as detransitioners. And Andre, you have been helpful with getting us connected with some people out at your church there in California, people that are working with detransitioners, and we're in the process of starting to form a very loose grassroots network of healthcare professionals that might be able to help these detransitioners get off their cross-sex hormones and maybe even reverse to some small degree some of the surgical procedures that they've had. But I did want to ask, Jill, does the American College of Pediatricians, have they been working along this line as well in terms of developing any kind of recommendations for detransitioners?
Yeah, I mean, these detransitioners deserve a lot of credit for, you know, coming forward and being brave, speaking out. And we, you know, try to help them have a voice to get the care. There are some groups I know that are working on, I don't know if I would say protocols, but just ways to help these young, most of them are, you know, young adults get back on track with their health. Because so many of them say their only choice is to go back to the very surgeons or doctors who did this, you know, when they're having complications or they're expressing regret, that's sort of where they get plugged in. Or they just have lost so much trust within the medical system altogether that they've just, you know, been abandoned. You know, so many groups just ignore them, deny that they exist. So we are working to help them get a voice. We're going to need some of our adult colleagues in medicine to help with this because they are getting, you know, young adults and on through adulthood that they're realizing these problems and needing the help. But we're part of this trying to raise awareness for them. We've got a special spot for them to sign on to this declaration, whether they want to be public or private, just so that they can have numbers that they do exist and that they are there. So definitely they deserve our compassion and our care in this fight. So thanks for bringing them up.
And here we can bring up again the CAS review, the final report, where they specified repeatedly that they view their National Health Service as being responsible for the continuing care of regretters and detransitioners. And we need to bring that into the U.S. health system, that these, you know, health insurers, Medicaid, Medicare, you know, all involved in helping people get railroaded into this bad answer, that they would be held accountable to get these people the care they need, even if that is going to be lifelong care for some of the complications that were brought on by the gender transition procedure. So that is for sure going to be part of this.
And Andre, you've just reminded me that our friends across the pond in so many ways are setting such a much better example than we are here in the U.S. I know that you agree with that, but it just seems like, what would Jesus do? Jesus would take care of people on the margins and those falling through the cracks. And so I'm pleased for those, and Jeff's been working to try to build up, help strengthen a network. And thank you for your help with that, Andre. And also any help from the American College of Pediatrics would be just wonderful. I don't want us to finish up this conversation without just challenging our listeners in whatever way possible to use their sphere of influence to get people to sign on at the end of the day. And it's great that Elon Musk, you know, put that on X, and it's great that it's, you know, on these other places. But the reality is that each one of us as healthcare professionals, physicians, surgeons in our networks have influence over those networks and organizations that we're a part of, boards that we serve on. Are there some key organizations or associations, Jill, that are missing here that you think, what kinds of organizations would you and your board like to see added to this declaration as signatories?
So we purposely wanted to start with the doctors, because this is coming doctor to doctor, and then all the people that support that. The next sort of circle, I would say, are these healthcare organizations. You know, for them to have policies that they, you know, will not do these procedures or their, you know, medicines, puberty blockers, all that within the organizations, you know, standing up to some of the regulations so that the social affirmation part of it isn't creeping in to the exam room, you know, that we're sticking with biology and evidence-based medicine. So that would be the big group, these medical organizations. We've had outreach from lawyers, legislators, you know, all along those levels. So we're sort of, like you said, reaching out to any sphere of influence, because it really does affect everything, you know, schools, parents, sports, it creeps into everything. So we're just continuing to reach out.
Well, the conclusion to the declaration, I just want our listeners to hear this, because while we've been, the four of us are very familiar with this and have been thinking about it quite a bit here, especially in the last several days. Given the recent research and revelations of the harmful approach advocated by WPATH and its followers in the United States, we, the undersigned, call upon the medical professional organizations of the United States, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Endocrine Society, the Pediatric Endocrine Society, the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and one we haven't mentioned so far, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, to follow the science and their European professional colleagues, and immediately stop the promotion of social affirmation, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries for children and adolescents who experience distress over their biological sex, and instead recommend comprehensive evaluations and therapies aimed at identifying and addressing underlying psychological comorbidities and neurodiversity that often predispose to and accompany gender dysphoria. So our listeners, if that sounds like something that you can sign on to, go to doctorsprotectingchildren.org, and there you'll be able to do what Jill has explained to us, a form that you can fill out and decide whether you want your name out there or not. Jeff, any final comments before we sign off?
Well, I'm just kind of reflecting how both Jill and Andre have been involved in this issue over many years. It's not like it's something that you kind of started into 3-6 months ago or after the CAS report came out. I know Andre's been involved in this maybe as well.
2016. I started getting emails from Andre in 2016.
I know it's been far longer than I have. And I know Jill has been through the American College of Pediatricians involved as well. And so, you know, just thank you for that long-term commitment to our young people here in the United States that are being subjected to this ideology and are supposedly undergoing this therapy when, in fact, it's not based on any good scientific evidence whatsoever. So a lot of your efforts have come to my attention, have helped me understand this, and I know it's been helpful to our members as well.
Any final parting words, either Jill or Andre? Go ahead, Jill. Anything?
Thank you both, and thank you to CMDA for giving this a voice and helping just to spread it to your members and beyond. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you very much to both CMDA and ACPEDS for your strong leadership on this, being nice and fearless, front and center, and helping those of us that are trying to do what we can on the front lines to be successful. We're very grateful.
Well, I hope our conversation today with Dr. Simons and Dr. Van Maal, it provided a spark of hope that we as doctors have finally had enough of this transgender moment and its associated delusions. with such a destructive impact on our nation, I want to strongly urge you to go to the doctorsprotectingchildren.org website and sign on to this declaration. As Jill mentioned, if you're at high risk for getting fired or censured in your current employment or position, you can sign on to the petition in an anonymous manner, protecting your identity. I just mentioned the transgender moment because in light of the multiple millennia history of Hippocratic medicine and the mantra of do no harm, you know, the last decade of transgender activism and ideology really has been just a moment. Responding to the Transgender Moment is actually the subtitle of a book written by Ryan T. Anderson of the Ethics and Public Policy Center called When Harry Became Sally. The importance of Ryan's book, which was written in 2018, and the perceived danger that it represents to the LGBTQ influencers of our culture, including those who are in high positions of influence within medicine, that actually led Amazon to drop that book from availability just a few years ago. I want to wholeheartedly recommend this book to you today, and I'm going to close out the program by sharing with you Ryan's concluding plan of action. Ryan first exhorts us to be careful not to stigmatize those who are suffering, reminding us that many people who have detransitioned were attacked not only from the political left for returning to a biological sex identity, but also they say that people, and that might include some Christian healthcare professionals, in the beginning made them feel like misfits in society, and that initially was part of what led to their desire to transition in the first place. Ryan also challenges us as clinicians to be ready to help those with gender dysphoria in ways that just don't endorse transgender ideology or aim to change people's bodies. I believe that CMDA has a vast network of physicians and PAs, nurse practitioners, and other caring healthcare professionals that can actually provide that sort of needed care. With the expanding number of studies and findings that deal with best practices for those who are gender confused right now, Ryan challenges us at CMDA, as well as those in other Hippocratic healthcare associations, to abide by global standards of care and provide alternatives to transitioning, like those now being mandated in the UK and by other national health services in Europe. This network also needs to be ready to develop standards of care and apply that care to the growing number of detransitioners that are in our midst because of the transgender tsunami. Dr. Jeff Barrows is actively trying to grow a coalition of physicians that are willing to be a part of this kind of network. If you, listener, would like to find out more or become a part of this movement or network, you can reach out to Jeff using the email advocacy@cmda.org. One of Ryan's most solemn challenges to medical professionals is that we grow a new generation of scholars and physicians to challenge the misdirection of our secular professional societies right now. This will make us terribly, terribly unpopular. But in the long run, it gives medicine a chance to have an element of respect in the U.S. public square for being loyal to good science as well as evidence-based medicine. Mr. Anderson concludes his challenge by reminding us that what is at stake here in this transgender moment is truly the human person. If the transgender activists succeed in their political agenda, our nation's children will continue to live by its lies about their own bodies at great cost to themselves physically and psychologically and socially. Christian healthcare professionals must live in accordance with truth in light of God's creation order and an ever-expanding base of clinical evidence that backs up our CMDA statement on transgenderism. You'll actually find that statement just by going online to cmda.org/ethics. I want to thank you for listening to this special edition of CMDA Matters today. Please share this episode or talk about it with your professional colleagues, your family, and your friends. We definitely want to get the word out that we are doctors protecting children now and at all times. Jesus took the welcoming and the protection of children so seriously, friends. He said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them." He also seriously warned those who would harm one of these little ones, and that such harmers, even if they're healthcare professionals, should have a millstone hung around their necks and then thrown into the depths of the sea. Causing children and adolescents to harm their own bodies with long-term medicalization, to compromise their future fertility, and to accept a falsehood related to confusion about their gender identity fits into that category. Instead, as healthcare professionals who follow Jesus Christ, we must be about bringing the hope and healing of Christ to the world, including those in that world caught up in this cultural moment of transgenderism. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week with our regular weekly program. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to CMDA Matters. If you would like to suggest a future guest or share a comment with us, please email cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share it on your favorite social media platform. This podcast has been a production of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.